The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties, and a lot of those cities, believe it or not, have properties for under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first property out of state in the next 4 months, I encourage you to apply to my out-of-state coaching program. I purchased properties out of state, and it's absolutely changed my life completely. The same is possible for you too. You simply need the right information. That's all it takes. My program will provide you the hands-on support and a step-by-step process to buy that first property within 4 months. So go to outofstatemoney.com to apply today. Again, outofstatemoney.com to apply today. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hey, are you struggling to manage your real estate business right now? Are you using various spreadsheets and random tools and systems that aren't connected and really aren't helping you at all? If this sounds like you, you need a partner like Baselane. Baselane is the number one banking platform that's built for real estate investors. So whether you have one property, whether you have 100 properties, we all know the job of a landlord is never done. You need a tool where you can effectively manage your business. Baselane's banking platform is built for your real estate business. It's banking, online rent collection, bookkeeping, analytics, and so much more. And it's all in one place. So with Baselane, you don't have to worry about going through these various spreadsheets and tools. You can do it all right here. Also, it's 100% free. So you can take control of your rental property business and your finances and ultimately increase your rental income. We know that's what it's all about. So you can join a group of over 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane to manage their rental property with confidence. Opening an account takes just a minute. So go over to baselane.com/Sam right now and sign up for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. So that's baselane.com/Sam. Again, baselane.com/Sam. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 206. Before we jump in, if you haven't already, please be sure to leave a rating and review. It goes a long way. It helps us get in front of more people and spread this message all over the world. So thank you in advance for doing that. And if you do that, send me an email with a screenshot of your submission. My email's in the show notes and I'll reply back and send you a 30-minute training on how to find and evaluate properties. And I actually do want to shout out a review we got recently from Eddie V12345. And it says, I love this podcast. I started watching because one of my best friends, Marlon, is Sam's cousin. My friend posted Sam's post about buying a home, and I started watching the pod from beginning and haven't stopped. I've been introduced to a lot of people I wouldn't know, and the name of the people Sam is getting now is legendary. More success, and it's only up from here. Well, shout out to you, Eddie, and then shout out to my cousin, Marlon. It's been a long time. I appreciate it. Make sure you send me an email, and I'll get you that free training. And I'm looking forward to hearing more feedback from you all. This episode today, I'm really excited about it. We're going to talk about syndication, which is a topic that we haven't touched on too much. And so I'm glad to talk a bit more about this with his brother, Chris Price. He and his partners have purchased over 1,000 units over the last few years. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel. If you're on the audio side, be sure to leave us a rating and review, preferably a 5-star rating and review if you love this show. So looking forward to hearing from you. We're live in Brooklyn, and I'm here with Chris Price. Chris, appreciate you coming down, and thanks for getting on the show.
Sam, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. And it's the power of networking. I think we spoke for the first time last week. I'm like, I'm going to be in town, and we got it booked. So appreciate it, man.
I love it. The timing is everything, and yeah. I'm glad that you got a chance to come back home and connect with everyone, and I'm glad we have an opportunity to connect to new.
Absolutely. So let's jump right into it, man. So you are a general partner and limited partner on 1,200 or so units. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
And I'm excited about this conversation today because we'll have an opportunity to talk about syndications, which is something that the average person doesn't really know about or understand. So I'm excited to get into that today. Mm-hmm. So let's get right in. Can you explain like what exactly is a syndication for someone who's never heard of it?
Yeah, I think this is such a great question. And when we all learn about real estate investing, we start to think about, you know, real estate investing, single family homes, fix and flips, wholesaling, those types of things. But what I tell people real estate syndication is real estate syndication is essentially pooling of people's money together to buy assets larger than what they would be able to on their own. And people syndicate many different things. People syndicate mobile home parks. People syndicate self-storage facilities, car washes. People syndicate assisted living facilities. In our case, we syndicate multifamily apartment complexes and you know, specifically commercial multifamily. Think about those assets that are 100 units and up, and we focus on those assets in specific markets throughout the United States, which I know we'll get into. But really, syndication is something that has been around for a while, but it's something that is really not well known, and it's a great way and strategy for people who love to invest in real estate to be able to expand and get into real estate, into larger commercial assets.
Definitely. So when you think about syndication, most might think of like large apartment complexes. And for the average person, they might think, well, how am I supposed to, I don't have enough money for that. Like, mm-hmm. how am I supposed to invest in that? So in your opinion, what are some reasons someone might want to consider investing in one of those large apartment complexes versus like a single family or versus like a one or two to four family unit?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. And what I tell people is that when they look at syndication, many of the people that get into the space of syndication, they love the idea of real estate investing, but sometimes they don't necessarily have the time, the capacity to be able to go out and find those assets, to, you know, put the work in and the sweat equity in, mm-hmm. to be able to spend the effort to renovate them or do, acquire the financing and all of those things from a single family perspective, but they want to be able to take advantage of real estate investing. And so what the real estate syndication model allows them to do really is to be able to take advantage of all of the benefits of real estate, the cash flows, the tax benefits, the appreciation that occurs naturally throughout mm-hmm. real estate, and the forced appreciation that takes place. They get a chance to take advantage of the expertise of those operators that are bringing them those opportunities. You talked about the general partners. Those general mm-hmm. partners bring limited partners or passive investors these opportunities, and then they get a chance to take advantage of that and invest passively alongside of them, all while being completely hands off. It's really a fantastic way for people to get involved into real estate and to tap into those things. And that would be one of those key reasons for people to get involved on the passive side. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll say on that point is that some people really, they want to be active. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be active and hands-on, I would say maybe real estate syndication as a passive investor is not necessarily for you. There is the other side of the equation where you can be the active investor. But for those people who like to be in hands-on, controlling every decision, you know, choosing all of the different things that are happening within that asset, you know, maybe a syndication model is not for you. But for those people who want to be passive, who want to get all of the benefits of real estate investing, but not having to deal with all the headaches of being the landlord, so to speak, this is the model for you.
Gotcha. So you mentioned general partner and limited partner. I don't want to go past that. Can you explain within like a syndication real estate deal, what does each one of those mean?
Absolutely. So in a real estate syndication, there are really two key partners that are involved in this. There are the general partners and the limited partners. The general partners are the people who are finding the deal. They are going, they're on networking with the broker. They are going out and underwriting the deal, assessing the properties, making sure they know, they have that market expertise and really understanding what's happening. What are the ins and outs? Everything from, you know, the demographic makeup of the market to the economics of the market. They are going in and they're heavily involved in being able to acquire the financing with the bank. Mm-hmm. They are doing the due diligence and walking every unit. They're checking out the roof. They're checking out the parking lot. They're making sure that, you know, checking out what needs to be done within the property when we get to executing the business plan. With respect to the business plan, they're actually also creating that business plan as well. When you look at the syndication model, it's really focused on some key fundamentals. typically in the type of syndication model that we're following, I should say, is a value-add approach. Mm-hmm. That value-add approach is looking at how do we increase the income of the property and how do we reduce the expenses. Mm-hmm. When it comes to increasing the income in terms of the business plan that we're putting together, the general partners are really looking at the different ways when we're assessing the asset. How do we increase the income of the property? Is there an opportunity to increase rents? Is there an opportunity for us to make some enhancements to the property through amenities, or mm-hmm. maybe there's a pay for parking type of situation? Many different things that I can certainly cover off on. And then going further down the line, they're also managing the property manager. If property management or asset management is not built within that syndication firm, they're typically outsourcing that to a third party. Mm-hmm. That third party is heavily involved in helping to execute the business plan, making sure that the property is well kept, of course, but executing the business plans in terms of leasing up all of the units, making sure that the leases are coming in at the market rents of where they need to be, et cetera. And then finally, just like in any other prospectus that an investor would get from other types of investment that they have, they're receiving monthly or quarterly reports. These quarterly reports are provided by the general partnership team as a part of their normal communication flow mm-hmm. with the operator. They're publishing these either through an email that you may receive or through some sort of quarterly webinar that may take place. And then as a passive investor, really, I tell passive investors are limited partners that they're passive, but they're passive after a certain point. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is that they are really the people who are, once they've assessed that general partner or that operator that they're choosing to invest alongside of, that's where their heavy due diligence is done. And what I like to tell people is that they want to invest with people who they know, who they like, and who they trust. When they've done that, really, they can lay back and they can invest their money. The other key point that I want folks to think about is when they are investing, they want to also know, hey, am I investing in the right markets? Am I focused on certain markets in the Southeast? Or am I focusing in on the Midwest? Where am I focusing? So once I have my operator, are they aligned in terms of the types of assets that are the locations of the assets that we want to invest in? Are they investing in the type of assets that we're looking in? Are we looking at workforce housing? Are we looking at luxury apartments? Are we looking at maybe other types of asset classes? And then once I've done that as a passive investor, when those opportunities are presented to me, I can assess them, make sure that they are aligned to my buying criteria, my investing criteria, and then I can go along and invest alongside of them. And at that point, I'm completely hands off and get a chance to receive the passive income distributions that get directly deposited into my bank account, et cetera.
Got you. So I definitely want to ask about deal structure and stuff like that. But one of the things you mentioned is, so basically it seems like the general partner is controlling the deal, finding the deal, doing the due diligence on the property itself, mm-hmm. putting together the business plan, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the limited partner is essentially providing the funds that are the limited partners are providing the funds that are needed to make the deal happen. As far as vetting a general partner I want to invest in, let's just be honest, it's a crazy time in our community right now, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of things going on and people are having a hard time trusting who should I trust? Right. Who should I invest with? Should I invest with someone at all? Mm-hmm. But if I do, what am I supposed to be looking for? So can you explain, what are maybe five things? If there's more, we can certainly mm-hmm. go forward with more. But what are some things I should be looking at if I'm a limited partner? I want to get into this passively, but I want to make sure the person who I'm investing in is legit.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And there is so much going on. And, when you think about these things, whether it's more, current times of especially in our community and people we're here in New York and we know that there are some folks that we're like, oh, man, how could this be? And then, of course, you go back even further. You think about Bernie Madoff and Ponzi schemes and all those different types of things. So who can I trust? How can I go ahead and invest my resources and make sure that I'm gonna get what I'm looking forward to? And what I tell people, outside of making sure that they know, like, and trust that individual, They really want to be focused on, are they investing with someone who has a track record? Is this someone who is just, you know, the new person on the block? And there's nothing wrong with that. There, you know, all of us have to start somewhere. But when you're investing with someone, you want to make sure that that individual or in their team has a track record of success. Have they done this before? Are these people that have lived and done what they're saying that they want to do? You want to make sure that, you know, and often cases, you know, some folks can go ahead and they can request background checks on those individuals to be able to know that they are, you know, investing in someone or something, you know, trustworthy. I would say the most important thing that folks would want to be able to do is just to make sure that they are building a relationship with those operators, getting to know them, getting to know their track record, they can also, you know, get in contact with some of the previous investors that have invested alongside of them as another model for them to focus on. When you look at those types of things, and thinking about, okay, this is someone who's you know, laid out an opportunity for me, you know, how do I go ahead and do my vetting process? Part of that vetting process could very well be, hey, do you have any references that you can provide me of previous investors, business partners that you've worked with to be able to check in on, you know, and then finally, I would say being able to, you know, look at their, you know, when you're assessing their track record of their deals, being able to look at their performance, you know, when they laid out that business plan and the pro forma for you as an investor, did they achieve that goal? If they didn't achieve that goal, what was it that maybe, you know, didn't, that made the deal fall short? There in this business, there's no one that's going to have a 100% success rate. You know, some may hit, you know, or exceed expectations. Some may just meet expectations, which are very good things, but some may not. And you want to be able to make sure that you're understanding when you're talking to those individuals, getting to know them, that yes, they can lay those things out there, and you can have a good understanding of how they performed. What did they do when that environment, you know, sort of was crumbling around them? Did they do right by their investors, or did they maybe have a more selfish look at things? And then you can judge a lot from individuals like that.
Definitely, it makes a lot of sense. You mentioned, for track record, if I'm new, like brand new to real estate, how do I know that like the documentation I'm looking at is true? Like you were actually a general partner on this deal. You guys actually made this much money in return. Like, are there some further steps I can take to like truly verify and know like I'm not looking at just something somebody made up?
Yeah, you know, I would say one of the things that one can do is in addition to getting access to that information, if they want to go ahead and do some further due diligence, you know, they can check in with that operator and ask for some of those documents. Hey, show me some of the documents that they can actually generate from banks, from other documentation that are involved in these types of investments, so that they can legitimately be able to compare. I would say in some situations, some of that information may be private information that they might not be able to disclose, but in most cases, they will be able to show, you know, here is the asset. The records of the purchase and the sale of the asset are very clear. So when an operator is laying out, for example, their track record, they will show oftentimes we acquired the asset at, you know, $55,000 a door. And, you know, that equated to, you know, $15 million for that particular property. And when we sold it, we sold that asset for, you know, $62,000 a door. And I'm making up the numbers, but then and that equated to $20 million. So there, you can, in that information, the passive investor can see directly how the operator was able to perform and execute their business plan, where they started and where the exit occurred. And those are helpful things that they can be able to have to be able to see the information, to be able to vet that a little bit closer.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that you're encouraging people to do that, because that just makes sense.
Exactly.
It just makes sense. So I appreciate that. This is something you mentioned while you're talking that some people may not be familiar with. pro forma. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So in many of the real estate syndication assets, when there's a presentation of a deal that comes to you as a passive investor, there's going to be a lot of great information that's laid out there for you. Look, these presentations will lay out everything, and that these presentations, by the way, I should make sure that everyone knows, their presentations are called, you know, either the operating memorandum, which lays out the entire business plan of what the operator is intending on doing to be able to execute the business plan to deliver on the returns that they're projecting to you. In that business plan will include, you know, details and bios on the operating team and other partners that are involved, things like the property management group, who the bank or the lender is that's involved in being able to help secure the financing on both the debt side of things, and then of course as the passive investors coming in for the equity component. But then they also go into many different details around, hey, what is the market like? What is the asset that we're acquiring? You know, is it a Class A asset? Is it a Class B asset or somewhere in between? Or is it, you know, what other types of details are there? But also within that package is also a pro forma, and that pro forma will lay out all of the details from an economic standpoint around the property. What is the purchase price? What is the price per door? What is the amount of debt that we are getting from the bank? What are the equity? What are all the income items and all of the expense items? And then that all of that information is laid out, and that will then also be able to show what the performance returns are for the investor. So an investor coming in and investing a certain amount, what is the projected return over the course of the hold of that 3 to 5 years that they will be in that investment from year one all the way to year five? What does it look like when there's an equity event? And the equity event is either a refinance or a sale. When will they see, you know, their capital back? All of that information is laid out in that pro forma, and it's just a projection. It doesn't mean that it's the gospel, if you will, of what is actually going to happen, but based off of the projections and the details that have been laid out, that this is the best projection that the operator can provide. And then once the deal is closed and we're actually operating it, then the reality starts to come together, and some things will make sure that that's on track exactly as the pro forma is laid out, and sometimes it may be ahead, it may be behind, but we try to make it, it's trying to be as close as possible so that it gives the passive investor a good picture of where that investment's going to be.
Definitely. I appreciate that. What, when you say Class A, Class B, because something that people probably have seen online is people are saying class this, class that, when you're talking about like real estate. Can you explain what that means to somebody who just may never, maybe this is somebody's first time hearing class? What are you talking about?
Yes.
I'm done with school.
Yes. No, exactly. No investor left behind, right? So Class A, if you think about it, think about when we were back in school, right? We had, you know, A was, you know, we were getting excellent grades, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you were on the D and F side, you weren't doing so good. And I like to tell people that essentially the quality of property is in the same line. An A class property is that luxury apartment complex in your neighborhood with all of the amenities. It has the doorman. It has the fancy pool. It has all the concierge service and all of those things that are built in to that luxury A-class apartment complex. But then on the flip side of that, on the D and F side of things, those are the things that maybe aren't, it's not in the nicest area. It's typically an older asset. It's typically in an environment where it might be a little bit more crime ridden. You know, that's the type of asset. But then your B and your C class properties are those that workforce housing that are really provide and good new schools, good neighborhoods, you know, supplying great housing for those people that are living and working in the area to be able to, you know, take advantage of, to raise their families. And these are great situations for people to be able to be in. And that's the type of housing that we focus on, really looking at a situation where folks are able to invest in or to live and work in a community that does right by them, and then also from an investment perspective, that it is a consistent demand for people that need that type of housing.
Definitely. I love that. And I'm glad we got to start just setting the table, if you will, because again, this is like something that is just so far above everyone's heads. And we're going to get into some stuff further, but would love to just talk about how you got started in syndications. Mm-hmm. When we first spoke before, like last week, it was interesting just hearing your journey to syndication. Mm-hmm. And to me, you got to it a lot quicker than most people do that I've actually at least heard of. So mm-hmm. we'd love if you could talk more about just your start in real estate and then this transition to syndication.
Yeah, well, my journey into real estate syndication is one it has been pretty quick to your point. I tell people this, I'm a pharmaceutical executive by day and I'm a real estate investor by night. And my journey really started, when my wife and I, we became sort of accidental landlords. We were starting our family and, instead of selling that condo unit that we had, we decided to hold on to it. But we held on to it and we moved into our single family home to start our family with our daughter and then things kind of went on from there. But when we held on to that condo, what we noticed was that we were, getting, a few $100 a month of cash flow every month. And we didn't really think much about that. We weren't very strategic about that mm-hmm. at that time. It was just like, oh, this is nice. And, someone's paying down our mortgage on our condo and we're able to, have a few $100 a month. This was in that 2012 time frame. Fast forward several years later, after all of this, my wife and I being corporate professionals, we were coached up doing the same things like everyone else was doing. Hey, go to school, get a good job, get advanced degrees. And by the way, when you get advanced degrees, you want to keep climbing that corporate ladder and you want to, do all of those things to build on your career. And by the way, you must throw your money in a 401k because that's the way that you're really going to be able to set yourself up for the future. And we did that. We followed that plan. And in that, we experienced a lot of volatility in the markets, watching our 401ks go up and down like a heart rate monitor. And that roller coaster, if you will, was not something that was really desirable for us. And we needed a way to really look at how can we find more stability in our investment strategy? How can we do things that can maybe provide us more consistent return? And that's, at that point in time, things started to converge for us. I read a book, that famous purple book by Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that was my gateway. It opened me up to how the wealthy people play. And what I didn't learn in that book was that wealthy people aren't throwing their money in 401ks and IRAs. They are investing in assets that provide them with passive income. They are that appreciate in value, that provide tax benefits, because it's not necessarily the money that you make, it's the money that you keep as well. And when I read that book in 2018, this really opened me up. And from there, we got into, hey, let's get into, maybe we'll invest in a business. Well, that didn't work out for us after, some attempts and looking into buying into different franchises. But at the same time, again, this idea of, hey, we have this condo, we're getting a few $100 a month with that, and this book is coaching us up on real estate investing. How about we, do some real estate investing? And so that was the strategy that we focused on. And we really, Sam, we were really looking at being able to go in and focus on single family home investing. I had joined a mastermind community of single home investors at that point in time. I had built out a whole strategy, a financial freedom strategy, if you will, for my wife and I around how many single family home assets would we need to acquire over the next, 10 years to be able to reach our financial freedom number. And at that same time that I was doing that, I was listening, continuing to educate myself and invest in my personal development, learning about strategies around, hey, how, what about, multifamily investing or commercial multifamily? I kept putting that off to the side. I'm like, there's no way I can do that. I'm still working in single family. And, we got to a point where we needed, I was like, this is an opportunity for us to invest in our strategy and go along. And fast forward, Sam, that the light bulb went off where someone, I was listening to a podcast after listening to several books. They said, hey, you don't need to graduate from single family to multifamily. You can just go right in. And it was at that point in time that we pivoted strategies. I would say this was about 2019 or so. We pivoted strategies to going into commercial multifamily, shifted gears to our business plan. And then that's what started us on the journey to multifamily, which I can tell you a little bit more about in a little.
Definitely, definitely. So talk about the first deal that you invested in and how much you had to put in and just like what that experience was like, because I think it would be great for people to know like what their first time investing in a multifamily deal might be like.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's such a good question because there was for many people coming into real investing in a real estate syndication can be a very nerve wracking thing. But I mentioned to you that I invested a tremendous amount in my personal development and learning about this space. So in addition to reading all of the books or listening to the books on Audible or listening to all of the podcasts and watching all of the YouTube videos for all the free information, like the good quality information that you put out, I was consuming everything. I mean, between whether it was, driving in the car, commute to work, whether it was when I was cooking dinner for the family, when I was cleaning, I was listening, when I was exercising, listening to podcasts, just consuming as much information as I could. And it did not seem that I had a saturation point. And so at that point in time, I learned so much. But then I needed to take some steps into getting involved in this. And getting involved in it for me was, hey, let me start joining some meetups. And so I joined meetups. I attended virtual and live webinars, or seminars, I should say, where I was, networking with folks, learning information, just consuming as much as I could. And this is throughout 2019. And just really, getting involved into all of those different things. And in that time, I started networking with other actual operators, people that were running multifamily syndication businesses. And in those times, I built relationships with those folks. I learned that, hey, they're focused in on the markets that I'm interested in. I wanted to be in very landlord and business friendly states. Generally speaking, those are the red states. And we focus specifically in the Sun Belt market from the Carolinas over to Texas and Arizona. So that's where I wanted to invest as a passive investor, because that would help stack the deck in my favor. And when I got to meeting different operators that were aligned with that strategy of, hey, we're focused on multifamily assets, but this unit count, we're focused on assets that are value add, all of those boxes were being ticked and hey, they're in our market. And so at that point in time, just continuing to networking, picking up the phone, talking to them, or, setting up time via Zoom or some of them were in the area, some of them were not. So a lot of virtual meetings, getting to know people was really an important thing for me, following their content and what they're producing so that I can soak that up a little bit more. And once I did that, then it all of a sudden, fast forward, to 2020, we all know what happened in 2020. The pandemic is upon us. And, I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, our multifamily game plan is put together, but, I haven't done anything yet. What am I going to do? And by the middle of the year, I had been presented with our first real estate syndication opportunity. This was a 48 unit Class B asset in Birmingham, Alabama, in a growing submarket of Birmingham, Alabama, that had a lot of great factors for it. Lined up for it, and including the operator who was someone who had a successful track record, who we had spent several months, a year building a relationship with, and then lo and behold, here's the opportunity finally presenting itself. And it was at that opportunity, once I've assessed all of those things, those factors that I mentioned to you, does it align with our strategy of where we want to invest and the type of asset that we want to be invested in? It was a pretty straightforward decision at that point in time, because I remember a conversation that my wife and I had. She's like, hey, You know, you've read a lot of books and you've listened to a lot of podcasts, but, you know, there's not any action that's happening behind that. And that was really the motivator for me, because, you know, all of the, I can have that analysis paralysis and I can continue to listen and read and do all those things. But if I'm not taking action, then I'm not doing anything. And so I took that step to be able to take that step into that investment, invested passively in our first deal. And so then now I have that practical knowledge of being an actual investor. What do the reports look like? How closely are we following to that pro forma, et cetera? And then the rest was history. And I can share more about our investment journey for there.
I love that. Shout out to your wife.
Oh, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Shout out to her.
Shout out to you.
That's awesome, man. How much did you have to put up? Do you remember?
Yeah. So, again, what we looked at in our strategy, we invested, our initial investment into a syndication was $50,000. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, you know, when we were looking at our single family home strategy, you know, that effort of being able to, you know, whether we were doing a turnkey, single family home investing, you know, there was still some due diligence that mm-hmm. was involved, but we would have to put in the same amount of work, but then we'd also have to be more involved in from an effort perspective, you know, dealing with calls from the property manager, dealing with, hey, your resident, just your tenant just moved out, you know, this is what's happening, and all those things. And even turnkey itself had some more hands-on involvement than we wanted to as busy professionals and yeah. wanted to be passive investors. And so we came out with that. We could invest in a turnkey single family in and around that amount. But then we also have to go through what I call the brain damage of, hey, we have to go get the loan from the bank and we have to supply our blood samples and so on. But no, I'm being facetious, but the amount of effort that it took to secure the loans and then, you know, go through that arduous process over and over and over again was something that was exhausting. So the passive investment aspect of it was super easy. Once I've done the due diligence that I was sharing with you earlier, then it became, hey, I've done this. I wire my money over into the account that it needs to be wired into, the assets acquired, and then I'm a passive investor now. And it kind of goes from there.
Love it. Love it. You mentioned something that I want to talk a little bit more about. You mentioned landlord friendly states and that you were interested in investing in landlord friendly states. And I scream from the mountaintops. Like, I really encourage people to strongly consider investing in landlord friendly states mm-hmm. that actually give you property rights, because in states that don't do that, we've seen what's happened over the last couple of years mm-hmm. and it's been horrible for some people, especially smaller landlords. What was your thought process behind that? Like, you were learning a lot, absorbing a lot. Why did you think it was necessary to do your best to focus on landlord friendly states?
Yes. Well, look, it was, you know, through the education that I was receiving, just through the podcast, and shout out to you for screaming from the mountaintops doing that. I just read something this morning about some laws that in the state of California that were recently passed that do not give landlords, it actually takes a lot of privilege, not privileges, but, you know, control away from landlords, and it makes it a very tenant-friendly state, which we can go into, I'm sure. But what I learned by that, this is a business. It is not about price gouging or anything along those lines. When you operate a business, you want to be able to have an environment that is working for you as a business owner, and these real estate assets are businesses. We want to be able to, work in places where and operate in places where they have a more tax friendly environment. We want to be able to operate in places that have an environment where, we want to be able to keep pace with the market rents and based off of the demand that's occurring in the marketplace. Those are important things. And and most importantly, if someone is not paying and their rent for whatever reason, of course we will try to work with them, or the operating team will try to work with them. But we want to, you know, if they're not, then we need to remove those people and get someone else in that will pay the rent. And then on the flip side of that, there's the aspect of, you know, focusing in on places that are growing. Mm-hmm. When in those landlord and business friendly states, there tends to be a very strong in-migration of jobs, you know, jobs and corporations, major corporations relocating from some of the more high cost areas, places like New York, like California, like Washington State, et cetera, and relocating to places like Texas and Arizona and Florida. And then where the jobs go, so do the people. The people and the in-migration of people have, you know, that migration and population growth then, you know, comes along and drives up demand for housing, not just, you know, residential housing in terms of residential single family homes, but also it drives up the demand for multifamily housing as well. And of course, that we're looking for that housing demand is so critically important, because if the demand is there, there's always going to be a supply of tenants that you need to have. And so as a passive investor, those were critically important things for us to focus on. And so we wanted to be in those spaces. And essentially, what I tell passive investors, it's about being able to stack the deck in your favor. What you're doing is you're putting yourself in an environment, in an investment environment that's going to be more favorable to you, mm-hmm. to make sure that your investment delivers on the returns that you are seeking out.
That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like, as far as states to invest in, some of the things people should be looking at is just how seamless or not is the process of moving on from a non-paying tenant. And really, to your point of stacking the decks in your favor, are the laws favorable to you and your outcomes?
That's right.
Increase the rents as needed? And how much red tape is there? You know,
so that's exactly right.
I hope people pay attention to that.
You have to pay attention to it. It's really so important. And you know, thinking about it in this idea, if you're in a situation where you have a tenant that is just sitting in your place, not paying any rent, and whether that's in a single family home or that's in a multifamily home, and you are going, you know, several weeks, months, a year in some cases, and to remove that individual or in their family from your property, that is several months, several thousand dollars potentially of lost rent. Not to mention the process that you had to invest legally with a real estate attorney to start to get that person removed from that process. So there's money coming out of your pocket in multiple ways. And this is just not a fair situation. And especially when there are other good people that are paying, mm-hmm. you know, paying on time and paying, you know, their rent and honoring their contract that they signed. This is what it's about. And so you want to make sure that your operators that are running these properties have the opportunity to remove those people that are not paying, and put yourself in a situation. Again, it's about stacking that deck in your favor.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And, you know, I've said this before, and, you know, not everybody liked it, but it's not charity, right? Like, charity has its place, right? And it's important to be charitable. However, like, real estate is a business. Like, you're a business owner, you have bills, you have expenses. And the way this business works is that the income you receive for the service you're providing goes to the expenses, that's to right. the mortgage, tax, insurance, maintenance, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, real estate to me is like the only business where it's acceptable, or people think it's acceptable, to not pay for the service you're receiving. Because mm-hmm. you wouldn't go to the grocery store and not pay right. before you walk out with your groceries.
Right.
You wouldn't go and buy clothes and, I mean, you shouldn't, some people do, but you wouldn't normally buy clothes and just walk out and say, you know what, I believe that it's my right to have these clothes, and I shouldn't have to pay for it.
Right.
That's not how it works.
No.
You know, and it's different if, you know, the tenant is trying to work with you, you work out some sort of arrangement. But there's some people who just don't care at all about it. And we've all heard the horror stories. Yeah. Like, some of us have experienced it individually, or have family or friends and so forth who have. And, you know, I hope we get to a place where there's more balance on both sides, where people can really look at the landlord's perspective mm-hmm. for once. Because, you know, even in a larger deal like the ones you're in, like, you don't know what people had to do to, like, get that money to become a limited partner and try to gain some income and some experience so maybe they could lead their own deal one day. Mm-hmm. Or on the smaller scale, like if you have a single family, multifamily, whatever the case is, like it takes work and sacrifice to be able to get the money to do it in That's the first right. place. So I think people should be a little more considerate and just, you know, it's a business. Like it just is what it is. It's a service. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a service business.
It absolutely is. And if people come at it with that mindset, I think that there will be a little bit more, you know, respect, if you will, to mm-hmm. those business owners, those property owners around those things. Yeah, the income and what's beautiful about the multifamily space is that, and what I tell people being a single family investor myself as well, is that when you have a single family asset and that asset is vacant or there's a tenant that is not paying, it is 100% vacant or that tenant is 100% not paying their rent on time. Whereas in the assets that we're investing in, from a multifamily perspective, you may have 1, 2, 5, 10 people not paying their rent at that point in time, and these are maybe an extraordinary situation, but you know, for you know, working to get them removed, but it's not going to crush your deal. You have reserves, and you have your capital reserves, and the income of the property that are being generated from the other residents that are there will still continue to be able to service the debt on the property, as well as you know other. Income that's being provided. So on the multifamily side, it does provide some insulation just based off of the sheer number of people that are in the property. But either way, making sure that people are paying on time and people are paying what the market rents are is a critical part to the business plan. And so when we focused on investing in these assets as passive investors, you know, this is really one of the key things that we wanted to be able to focus on, that we were able to invest alongside of investors that had those types of favorable environments alongside of them where we were investing, so that it can help ensure our greatest opportunity to get our return on investment that we were seeking out.
Definitely. So 2020 was the first deal you invested in.
Yeah.
What deals did you invest in from there?
Yeah. Let me correct. 2020 was, I misspoke. 2021 was my first deal. In 2020, I was presented some opportunities. Yeah. The many I turned down. 2021, was my first opportunity to actually invest. So pardon me for that. But in 2021, getting into that, was that asset in Birmingham, Alabama, which I was sharing with you about, how my date's a little twisted.
It's okay.
So my
apologies. Worries. No problem. Dope. So where things go from there? Cause I know we're at 1,200 or so or something like
yes.
that now.
Yes.
So things have grown pretty quickly.
So quickly after the first, at the same time that I had been networking with the operator for the asset in Birmingham, Alabama, I was also networking with several other operators who I had an opportunity to spend time with and get to know over the course of 2020, and you know, through the pandemic. And while many people went into a hole during 2020, not knowing what to do. Hey, it's a pandemic. You know, I'm gonna just let go, and I'm not look up. And you know, again, I looked at it very differently. I took that time and I, you know, had some self-reflection, and I said, you know, what can I do in this time to be able to continue to invest in myself and continue to move forward? And therefore I continued to pour into networking and growing, and you know, the whole Zoom and Teams and you know, all the different web meeting services, you name it, I was there. And you know, a lot of these operators in the real estate mastermind communities that were there were growing and thriving at that time, and they were putting out a lot of great information and also offering an opportunity to network with a lot of great operators out there. In that time between 2020 and 2021, I was networking with a lot of folks, and my next opportunity came shortly on the heels of the asset that we invested in in Birmingham, Alabama. This next asset was a 41-unit property with an operator that we invested in Houston, Texas. And everyone knows, you know, Texas in general, but Houston is a very thriving market. You have medical, you have NASA, you have energy, you have academia, you name it. It has a tremendous economy going on in it, and it is continuing to grow from an industry perspective, but also from a population perspective. And so when we looked at this opportunity, this was another value add opportunity with another operator who had a very successful track record in the Houston market. And so we invested alongside of them to be able to get into that asset and as passive investors. And so in quick succession, we were up to over 80 units in just two investment opportunities. Fast forward just a little while after that in 2021, we were presented with another opportunity. I should say that there are several opportunities that crossed my inbox, if you will, as a passive investor through all the different networking that I said no to. Not every deal am I saying yes to. I want to make it clear out there to the audience that, oh, this is just Chris and he's just throwing money at every. That's not the case at all. In fact, I say no to more deals than I say yes to. That's why it's very important to make sure that you have your investment criteria. And one of the investment criteria that we were looking at that I didn't speak to was the idea of, you know, what is the debt? Is the debt fixed or is it variable? What is that type of situation there? And looking at the financing opportunities, what are the different projected returns? We were looking for a certain type of cash on cash return or cash flow on a quarterly or monthly basis. What we were looking for, in that investment, would we be able to, our goal was to double our money during the hold of those assets. And so we wanted to be able to focus on assets there. So if those deals that came into my inbox didn't check those boxes, it was easy to filter them out. And so then we got laser focused on what we wanted to invest in as passive investors. And we got involved and, hey, we started taking down. We got into our second deal. And then shortly after that, we were presented with another opportunity with a very well-known group in the Atlanta, Georgia MSA, our Metropolitan Statistical Area for No Investor Left Behind, right? And so we got into that deal. That was a 273 unit asset in the Atlanta, Georgia MSA. Again, we invested passively $50,000 into those three deals. And at that point in time, our investment journey was well under. This was in the September timeframe. So in about 3 months, we were up to over 300 units in that short period of time as passive investors, taking advantage of the cash flows, the tax benefits, all the things that come with real estate, but we didn't have to deal with any of the operations or any of the loan or any of those things that were involved with it.
I love that. I love that. And something that I'm thinking about is, like, you took a lot of time to learn, to educate yourself, to network, to just make sure you felt comfortable with mm-hmm. everything. And then there was a point where you took action, and shout out to your wife again. Yes. She pushed you to take that action, and you did in a big way. And what I see from a lot of people is they take the courses, they do the mentorships, they listen to the podcast. And I talk to people sometimes and it's like, you're in a position to make some moves. Something's holding you back. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just consume forever. So I think I'd say this is an encouragement to other people. It's okay to be thorough. It's okay to do your due diligence. It's okay to make sure that you understand what's going on. But at some point, you have to jump off the porch.
That's right. That's right. You have to take action at some point in time. You know, there is only so much information that you can get through just consuming all of the books and all of the podcasts and all of the YouTube videos. Believe me, I have been there. And it feels good, right, to just continue to learn and it's like that time you're at the starting line and they're like, on your mark, get set, get set, and you don't know, and you're, but you're never going.
Yeah.
There has to come a time where you, where the starting line gun goes off, and you're running and you're sprinting. And that was for me, that nudge from my wife to say, hey, you know, let's take some action, was really an important thing for us, because then taking that step, you know, and applying the learning, what you're doing when you transition from that theoretical knowledge, the PhD level knowledge of things, then transitions to the practical knowledge of things, that you know, now you are not just in theory doing it, but you're actually hands-on doing it, and the lived experiences that we're able to achieve is something that is really powerful. When you are a passive investor into these deals, now you're seeing how people communicate. Hey, of all the three different operators that we invested alongside of, you know, some of them I'll invest with them again, some of them I won't. I appreciated the communication style of some of the investors. I appreciated the opportunity to be able to, you know, reach out to them and get on the phone with them and learn from them about, hey, what's going on, or hey, this is what's happening in the market, or hey, this is what's happening with the deal, and we're dealing with this situation or that situation, all of those types of things. Whereas some folks are a little bit more, let's call it not as communicative as others. And so that was like that, you know, something that I learned as a passive investor around what I liked and what I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And these were important things for, yes, I'm getting my distributions. Yes, I'm getting my tax statements, at the time that I need them every year. But then, you know, something was lacking in the different communications models. Yeah. And that was something that I needed to pay attention to. And once I got that, I started to learn, okay, what I like and what I don't like. And so that practical knowledge is really important.
Definitely. I love it. And I know we're talking about consuming and stuff. That does not mean don't listen to the show. Keep listening to the show. We need that.
That's right. Keep listening to the show. You need that information.
So interest rates. Let's talk about interest rates. You spoke a little bit about it when looking at deals, but we'd love to talk about it more broadly too. So there are talks next year, the Fed reducing the federal funds rate a few times potentially next year. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Because you got started when interest rates were super low back in like 2021. Like, mm-hmm. Things are still pretty good. Mm-hmm. So just what's your thoughts on the future of interest rates in the coming year, mm-hmm. and how that might impact some of the deals you might do, might not do?
Yeah. So you, like you said, in the time that we were getting involved in real estate syndication, it was one of those landmark events, right? We had those, you know, bottom basement level interest rates where, you know, you're seeing the deals in 2-4% interest rates. And and as a passive investor, that was really something that was great for us, right? We, you know, getting into those deals, not only were they able to secure the asset at, you know, below, the strike mark, if you will, with what, where they wanted to acquire the asset, but they also got great, debt on that project. And that was something that was really a key signal for us in terms of, you know, investing in those particular opportunities. But then also, one of the things that we looked at, we also saw that there were some opportunities that we saw during the time as deals started to shift, where there were some opportunities where investors, you know, certain groups took what they call floating interest rates, or many people in single family might know them as variable interest rate loans during that time. And so during the time of the pandemic, when rates were super low, they were able to take advantage of those super low rates. You know, fast forward over the course of the past, year and a half, 2 years, as the Fed has steadily increased those interest rates, for those groups that took out various variable interest rate or floating interest rate loans, those properties and the debt on them is becoming very difficult for them to maintain the debt service coverage ratio on those properties. And, you know, they're in some cases they're having to do certain things like capital calls where they're requesting additional funds from passive investors to come in and help their deals, or they're having to find other ways to navigate with those banks to be able to structure the loan in a way, if they will work with them, so that they can hold on to the asset and ride it through these times. But in this time, as a passive investor and transitioning over now into an active investor, and bringing opportunities to other investors who are looking to invest alongside of me passively, we are looking entirely and for the most part at fixed interest rate debt. And what that means is that many of the deals that were working, you know, 2-3 years ago just aren't working so much right now. Not only are we dealing with asset prices that are significantly higher due to the appreciation that has occurred in the marketplace over the past few years, we're also dealing with an environment where the interest rates are making it very difficult for those to acquire those assets as well. And so a lot of deals that would have worked 2-3 years ago maybe aren't working so much now. But for those deals that are working, it takes a lot of work to be able to acquire those. And so the operators that we're partnering with, they have, not only do they have great track records, but they also have great relationships. And that track record that they have allows them to secure the best financing terms, government financing, FHA loans, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loan products that are able to get them long-term fixed interest rate debt to be able to acquire the asset. Where I see things going, and I think we've seen a signal from the Fed over the past two sessions that they have not raised the interest rate, and in fact they've held steady. A lot of reports are saying, that I'm reading are saying that, you know, this that things are going to continue that way, and then perhaps there may be even some reduction in interest rates in 2024. And as we're recording this in December of 2023. And so what I would like to, I believe that, yes, there will be some flattening of that, because the economy is, in terms of what the government and the Federal Reserve is looking to be able to accomplish, they are accomplishing their goals of being able to slow things down, to slow inflation. And then with that, they're also going to look at, okay, well, how do you balance that in a way so that you do not cause a recession, and that you can stimulate the economy in a way to incentivize investors. And that is going to come through potentially the reduction of interest rates in 2024, potentially the latter half. This is my N of one opinion. I'm no prognosticator, but in terms of the things that I'm seeing out there, this is what I would project out there.
Got it. It makes a lot of sense. My prediction is, as they go down, I don't think it's going to be like a tremendous drop, but as they go down, my prediction is that there'll be more competition, especially in like the 1-4 unit space, like the smaller residential space. I think there'll be like a tremendous increase in competition, because mm-hmm. a lot of people have been either not able to qualify with the 7 or 8%, or just like, I'm not paying these high prices plus that interest rate. So I think it's going to be a flood of buyers. My prediction.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be the same in like the commercial multifamily space? Yeah. How do you think that dynamic could potentially be different? Mm-hmm. I know it's probably not as straightforward as the 1-4 units.
Yeah. So I think I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I'd say that the worlds are more connected than we think.
Okay.
When you think about the residential single family 1-4 unit assets, when you think about that, that supply is not only for investors like you and me and others. It's also for that those people who are that are looking to buy their first home or their next home. And then now you have added competition with firms like BlackRock and some of the other major funds out there looking to acquire these assets to provide those real estate returns to their funds and to their investors. So they see the game as well, and they know that the real estate is a tremendous asset to be investing in. But when you have that type of situation, what you are seeing for those would-be home buyers or those new those home buyers that are looking to move to their next home, they are being priced out of the marketplace because interest rates are high. And not only are interest rates high and making that cost of acquiring their first home or their next home difficult, they're also what has occurred over the past few years due to the demand of housing is that those asset prices, those prices of those single family homes, 1 to 4 units, have also appreciated in value as well. And when something like that takes place, you know, that makes that acquisition of that first home or that next home very difficult for them. And so what are these folks left to do? They are left to then go ahead and have to find housing somewhere. Maybe they try and rent that home in the neighborhood. Or if they can't do that because the competition is so fierce, then they're going to move on to the apartment side of things. When it comes to apartment investing, Those dynamics that I was just mentioning have an effect on the multifamily space as well. When you look at the investment into multifamily assets, that demand from housing because of the lack of supply in the single family 1 to 4 space for those new home buyers or would be home buyers, you know, they're now looking and seeking to rent those apartment units that are taking place. That is naturally increasing the asset values of these multifamily assets because those multifamily assets are also increasing their rents to keep pace with inflation and with the demand that's happening in the marketplace. And so what I see happening in the multifamily space is a continuing of that. I see, especially in certain markets, this is why the market and that you're investing in is so important, because this is not a universal truth throughout all markets throughout the United States. In certain markets, when you invest in these assets, you're relying on the expertise of those operators who know down to the zip code, the assets and the demand that's happening in those areas. And so investing in those places where the assets are continuing to appreciate in value, both naturally and through forced appreciation through the value add that's taking place, there is an opportunity to continue to see those rent increases, and therefore those asset values are going to increase as well. And when we have that fixed interest rate debt that is secured on the project, as well as the equity from the investors, those residents that are living in those buildings are paying down. Just like if you had a single family home, that tenant is paying down that mortgage. Well, in a multifamily asset, it's the same concept, just on a larger scale. Those 100 tenants or 200 or name the number, they're paying down that mortgage on a monthly basis, and the asset value continues to appreciate in value, plus the equity pay down is occurring. And then when we talk about the returns that take place for passive investors, we get to all participate in that.
Definitely. I love that. I appreciate that explanation. Before we wrap, I would love to talk about the transition now, because when you started, you were a limited partner.
Yeah.
And passively investing, but now you're shifting to general partner, mm-hmm. where you're the lead on the deal and you'll have limited partners with you. But, you know, earlier you mentioned all it takes to be the general partner.
Yeah.
Now you're taking that on. So mm-hmm. I'd love to hear more about that and just what's the plans for that transition.
Yes, and thank you for this question. And you know, in my journey of soaking up all of the information, Sam, like I learned that, you know, I actually love this a little bit more than just being a passive investor. And I wanted to be able to help others get involved in this. And, you know, in my journey of learning and being a passive investor, you know, that passion for being able to help other people was something that was really coming out from my point of view, and that desire to continue to grow personally, to that desire to have a bigger impact on the world and the society was something that was really meaningful to me. And, you know, I told you in the audience earlier that my beginnings and still in my career as a professional, I get a chance to help people, helping them with life-saving medications on my pharmaceutical side of things. But as a real estate investor, I get a chance to help people, build wealth and build generational wealth potentially, as it relates to investing in real estate and passively. And that was something from when I thought about the legacy and the impact that I could have on, for my family, for my future, for on others, you know, that was something that was really important to me. So throughout 2021 and that journey that I had led me into, you know, into early 2022, or excuse me, late 2021, to decide, hey, I want to do more than just be a passive investor. And so I took an opportunity to invest in more into my personal development. And, you know, one of the folks that I follow very closely, who's no longer with us, his name is Jim Rohn, a famous author and speaker. You know, he talked a lot about, you know, personal development. And he, in his famous quote that I recite to everyone, is that he says that, you know, a formal education, you know, going to school, getting all your degrees and certifications, that will make you a living. But a self-education, you know, going to seminars, investing in your personal development, networking, building yourself, that could make you a fortune. And so I did that, and I invested in my personal development, and I invested in a mastermind program in early 2022, to be able to learn how to grow my expertise in the multifamily syndication space. And that mastermind program is a program, called the Michael Blanc Dealmaker Mastermind. Michael Blanc is a well-known real estate syndicator in the space. This is a man who has, you know, thousands of units of assets and hundreds of millions of dollars of assets under management. He has seen it all. He was a successful professional and business owner, had it all crashed down, and then, you know, decided to invest, switch from fix and flipping to that, then actually moving on to real estate syndication. And he's had so much success that he built a whole education program around it. And throughout my journey, one of the podcasts that I was listening to was his podcast. I was reading his book. His book is the Yellow Book, the Financial Freedom with Real Estate book, and that was something that I consumed, you know, just in so much time. And it was that led me into investing into the mastermind program. And in that mastermind program, you know, I got a chance not only to get that structured education on everything from how do you underwrite a deal? How do you choose the markets that you're investing in? How do you structure a real estate syndication opportunity? You know, what are the what are the different resources that you use to be able to assess the marketplace? All of those different, you know, what makes a good deal? What's a bad deal? You know, you asked a question earlier, what's a class A versus a class, you know, B or C? All of those things, all of that form, that education is provided to you in this structured way. But what that also provides you is the network. This is a network of other people, maybe rookies like me at the time, to then also other professionals, pros that were doing this for years and decades already, and had, you know, and were as successful as Michael, and looking for that at that network of being able to have other investors alongside of them, where you can present deals, share information, network with others, and I took that opportunity to do that. And, you know, fast forward into 2022, I was all gung ho, you know, networked with some other folks who we were looking to be able to partner and do deals. And I would say that started in March, and by June, July, that had fizzled out. And I was like all down and out. And I mean, here we are, like, you know, my dreams of building a syndication, you know, team, excuse me, is not something that is going to happen. There's got to be another way. And, at that point in time, I decided to focus on, you know, the aspect of the real estate business that I actually was really passionate in. And that was, you know, being able to educate people and being able to help raise capital from other investors, who were interested in investing passively into real estate deals. So I honed in on building my skills in that, investing in different systems to be able to help me, improve my ability to help educate folks and to attract investors. And so that's really what started to get me on that path to being able to invest as an active investor, and then partner with other operators in a co-general partnership, so that we can bring deals together to those investors in our networks.
I love that. I love that. I'm excited to see where things go and how things develop over the years. with you as a general partner. I think it's going to be really exciting to see. But I'm just thinking about, you know, just the interview. I appreciate the interview, of course. And I'm thinking about just, you know, you started small. And mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, mm-hmm. the first rental anything was the condo.
That's right.
And a lot can happen starting from small beginnings. So that's I think that's, you know, a lot of takeaways from this episode, but that's definitely one of them.
That's right. Yeah, starting small, but starting, I think, is mm-hmm. is the key word to emphasize. One can come into this, and again, I'll stress the analysis paralysis. We all can get into our heads in so many different ways, and I think, you know, whether it's that that imposter syndrome, whether it's that mindset of, oh, who am I? I can't do this. There's no way that little old Chris from this place can do this. But, you know, I took a step back and I really, you know, said to myself, you know, you just got to take one step at a time, and taking that action into the condo, to then, you know, into passive investing, to then now being able to, you know, connect with other investors, educate them in my network, help them understand the benefits and value of passive investing, and then, you know, raising, you know, millions of dollars from folks to help them invest alongside of us so that they can then build their wealth for their family is something that's really really empowering, but a really powerful responsibility that I have, and I take great pride in that, and you know, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to be able to connect with you.
Absolutely, couldn't have ended it better myself. But I appreciate you taking time to interview, and would love if you could share with the folks like where they can reach out to you, where they can follow up with you, and just keep up with the journey.
Yes. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity on the show. And I'm just, I know so many outstanding people have been on your show, and you know, I feel honored to be, you know, one of those individuals, and you know, on my journey, people can reach me. You can go onto my website. My website is redfoxmultifamily.com. There you can learn more about our company, what we do, and how we go about doing it, see a little bit of our portfolio and our assets that we've been able to acquire both passively and actively over the past couple of years here. And then you can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. It's a great, you know, people can use social network, or you can let social media, or you can let social media use you. Use social media to build your network. You know, I love, you know, interacting with folks on there. I do it daily. You know, it's a great way to exchange information, to meet, you know, operators, to meet other people who are doing things. You can reach me there at Christopher Price on LinkedIn and all the other social medias. But find me there, and I'm happy to connect with you. We can book a call if you'd like to talk and just share your ideas of where you're going. I do it all the time, so please do reach out.
Love it. Appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you are on the audio side, make sure you leave us that rating and review. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you all so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.